This audio recording is protected under U.S. copyright laws. It is produced by Nichols Patrick CPE and provided by your State Society of CPAs for your personal, non-commercial use. Further reproduction, distribution, or commercial use of this recording without written permission from Nichols Patrick is prohibited. Requests for permission to reproduce this material should be addressed to Nichols Patrick CPE, Suite A, 973 West Liberty Street, Hubbard, Ohio, 44425. Welcome to the weekly tax update for November 12th, 2013. Would have been November 11th, except that November 11th, Monday, was a holiday. We have eight items culled from the developments this week, beginning with a cautionary note that two recent developments have increased the likelihood that companies who contract their manufacturing will reach an agreement with the contract manufacturers and put that in writing in order to protect who gets the Section 199 Qualified Domestic Production Deduction. Next, a private letter ruling from the Internal Revenue Service outlining what is an unusual grant which would be exempt from inclusion in a charity's publicly supported status. Then, the Large Business and International Division has issued new mandatory IDR enforcement procedures, and those are going to really be important to all large businesses and those with international connections. Then a really well-done field attorney advice in which the IRS explains why cash bonuses paid by an employer are not deductible until the year the bonuses are paid. And then a cautionary note for practitioners, the IRS is now forcing all applicants for same-day employer ID numbers to apply online as of November 5th. If you want an employee ID number same day, you're going to have to do that application online, and of course you're limited to one application per day. Then what I found somewhat amusing, a speech by IRS employees at the AICPA Tax Division meeting offering up their hope that taxpayers and agents will be reasonable regarding the repair regulations de minimis rule and how it might apply to small taxpayers who, according to the regulations, are not particularly obligated to have a written de minimis policy. Then, a long-awaited nationwide availability of fast-track settlement program for small businesses and the self-employed. This allows a small business or self-employed person who is under audit and who does not agree with the agent's positions to ask for mediation during the audit instead of waiting until after the audit is done and preparing a protest and going to appeals. Finally, we are reminded again that if you want to claim a mortgage interest deduction, the holder of the mortgage must actually file the mortgage. You can only claim home mortgage interest on debt which is secured by the principal residence or a secondary residence. And anyway, this happens to be a principal residence case. So, with that as introduction, let's get started. First, in Advo Inc. 141 TC number 9, the tax court analyzed facts using a combination of the factors previously addressed in Grott and McKay Realty to conclude that a direct mail advertiser was not entitled to take almost $1.7 million in deductions for the production of its mailings because it didn't have the benefits and burdens of ownership of the mailings during production. Its third-party printers did. Then, on October 29th, the Large Business and International Division issued a directive, cited as LBNI-04-1013-008, making it easier for a taxpayer to avoid a challenge by the service of its claimed Section 199 deduction if it has an agreement with its contract manufacturer counterparty to ensure that the deduction is only being claimed once. And this seems to be the service's primary concern, and reasonably so. The guidance specifies that if both parties to a contract manufacturing arrangement come to an agreement over who has the benefits and burdens of ownership and provide a basis for why that they believe that is so, and certify a couple of things under penalty of perjury, the IRS generally won't challenge the arrangement. One of the things the counterparty must certify under penalty of perjury is that it has never claimed the Section 199 deduction for any tax year during the term of the contract manufacturing arrangement. That is, the arrangement that we are presenting to the Internal Revenue Service and the arrangement we are memorializing by contract is the arrangement that both the parties have believed they had from the very beginning. Next, in Letter Ruling 2013-42-011, the IRS rules that a proposed bequest to an organization that operates a camp for seriously ill children constitutes an unusual grant within the meaning of Regulation Section 1.170A-9F6ii, because the size of the grant is not only unusual and unexpected, but would also adversely affect the group's publicly supported status without the unusual grant designation. The criteria for an unusual grant generally apply to bequests from disinterested parties which are attracted by reason of the publicly supported nature of the organization, are unusual or unexpected with respect to the amount, and would, by reason of their size, adversely affect the status of the organization as normally being publicly supported. Then we go from the regulations under 170A to the regulations under 509 and reference 1.509(a)-3c4, which states that all the pertinent facts and circumstances will be taken into consideration to determine whether a particular contribution may be excluded. No single factor will necessarily be determinative, and then the regulation goes on to list 8 factors, such as whether the contribution was made by a person who was particularly close to the organization, whether it was a bequest or an inter vivos transfer, whether prior to the year in which this contribution was received, the organization met the one-third support test, whether the organization may reasonably expect it to attract a significant amount of public support after the particular contribution. In other words, so that this particular contribution will not upset the organization's general publicly supported status. Then, on November the 4th, the IRS Large Business and International Division released mandatory, stringent, new procedures for enforcing information document requests leading to the issuance of administrative summons, allowing examiners almost no discretion, even at the manager level. This is probably the most dramatic development in the audit process in the last 30 years. There is no discretion. Once the IRS exam team sets a reasonable IDR response date, there is no discretion for auditors to revisit that decision. Under the new process, if information requested in an IDR is not received by the IDR response deadline and the new requirements for issuing IDRs have been followed, the examiner is required, without exception, to issue a delinquency notice within 10 calendar days of the IDR response deadline. The delinquency notice sets a new deadline that can't be more than 15 calendar days away, absent territory manager approval. If the IDR response remains incomplete by the delinquency notice deadline, the examiner is required, without exception, to issue a pre-summons letter within 14 calendar days of the delinquency notice deadline. The pre-summons letter sets a new deadline, which can't be more than 10 calendar days away. If the IDR response remains incomplete by the pre-summons letter deadline, the examiner is required to coordinate the issuance of an administrative summons with assigned counsel. The process is mandatory and has no exceptions. It's really then important for all of us to understand that the rules for dealing with the IRS and its information document requests in large corporations and any corporation with an international involvement no longer permit us to game the system or to stall the agent and put time pressure on the agent. IRS has had enough of that. They're changing the rules, and it's probably about time. Next, as I mentioned in the introduction, this Field Attorney Advisory 20134301F does a very thorough job of explaining when bonuses are deductible and when they are not and why. This particular field attorney advice concludes that cash bonuses paid by an employer are not deductible until the year the bonuses are paid because they did not meet the all events test any earlier than the date the amounts are paid. In this case, as it's analyzed, the employer retained the right to modify or eliminate the bonuses at any time before payment. These particular bonuses are calculated using formulas that are largely based on the attainment of various metrics at the company sector unit or individual employee level. Bonuses awarded are generally not paid until after a committee of the employer's board of directors approves the bonus plan settlement and payment of the bonuses, neither of which occurs until after the end of the fiscal year. So we don't meet the all events test, therefore the bonuses are not deductible in the year accrued, they're deductible in the year paid. But the good thing about that field attorney advisory as a learning tool is that it does a great job of citing authority and analyzing authority. It's about 12 pages long. Anyone who would like to learn more about the all events test as it applies to bonuses and some of the historical precedent would do well to read that field attorney advisory. Next, just a notification that the IRS is now forcing all applicants for same-day employer ID numbers to apply online. You can still request a new ID number by faxing or mailing a Form SS-4, but you will not get same-day service. IRS phone assisters are only going to be available to help those with previously assigned employer ID numbers, and there's a limit of one employer ID number per day, even using the electronic system. Then, next is the just news of this expression of hope on the part of IRS officials that small taxpayers who are not required by the new repair regulations to have a written policy will somehow figure out a way to document or perhaps just through consistent usage their use of a de minimis policy by reference to what they do with their books and records, so that both revenue agents and taxpayers will be reasonable about the taxpayer's use of the new $500 de minimis allowance for repairs without requiring those repairs to be capitalized, even if they might appear to have a long life. On November 6th, the IRS announced the nationwide rollout of its Fast Track Settlement Program to help small businesses and self-employed individuals resolve disputed issues and expedite case resolution quickly within the IRS's Small Business and Self-Employed Division. The alternative dispute resolution technique, in this case mediation, is designed to help taxpayers save time and avoid formal administrative appeals or lengthy litigation. The goal is to resolve audit issues within 60 days. Taxpayers who are interested and their representatives who are interested should go to www.irs.gov, search for Fast Track Settlement, view a short video, which is available as a link to that page, download the application, which is also available, linked to that page, and proceed to enroll their client who is in need of Fast Track Settlement in the program. Finally, Christopher Francis, a tax court summary opinion in which a couple who borrowed money from her mother to buy a home and executed all of the appropriate documents, a mortgage note and a mortgage, but the mother failed to file the documents so that her interest in the home was not secured by the mortgage, meaning that the interest her daughter and her husband paid was not deductible. And that's a wrap for this week. Thank you for joining me, and remember, stay safe.